Hey guys, welcome back to That Canadian Podcast. I am That Canadian and your host, Sam. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Much better than my singing, anyway. And to help us kick off the spooky season, Hunt a Killer has just released a new horror subscription game that takes you into the Blair Witch universe. I'm a huge fan of horror movies, and if you are too, you'd know that there are certain rules that characters shouldn't break if they want to make it to the end of the movie. And when they do break them, we find ourselves screaming these rules at them. Don't go in there! Or, what are you doing? Never split up! It's the number one rule! I remember when I was a kid and saw the Blair Witch Project for the first time. We lived in the boonies, in the middle of nowhere, and there was nothing but forest around us. I was terrified to go outside to get to the car, let alone play outside. And when I finally did gather up the courage to go out for a walk in the woods, I felt like she was watching me with every step I took. That kind of fear is why I'm excited to announce that Hunt a Killer has partnered up with Lionsgate to give us another amazing escape room experience. But this time, it's not a mystery, it's horror. This game involves you helping a woman named Rosemary Kent, who lives on the edge of the infamous Black Hills Forest. She needs your help finding her missing son. In order to reunite their family, you need to investigate the eerie and mysterious forest on your own. But you need to be careful. You may come across the Blair Witch, or those who help her. I just made my order and I seriously cannot wait for it to be delivered. If you'd like to try it out for yourself and save some money while you're at it, go to huntakiller.com/horror and use the discount code WEATHERS, WEATHERS, to get a 20% discount off your first box. Can you survive the curse of the Blair Witch? It's Freaky Friday, and it's the first week of October, so that makes this week's episode extra special. What makes this story so special, you ask? Well, this story that I'm going to be reading to you is the story of how one man's tragedy turned into a legend that still puts fear into the hearts of men, women, and children all over the world. Dramatic, right? Okay, let's dive in. In October 1959, a man named Frederick arrived in the small town of Springwood, Ohio. He quickly found work as a gardener at the local hospital and at several homes within the city. Talk of his impeccable work and extremely fair prices rapidly spread through the town, which got him even more jobs. Although he was very polite, he was quiet and mostly kept to himself, keeping his head down and focused on completing the task at hand. One of his favorite clients were the Ericksons. They were a wealthy family in town who employed a young woman named Emmeline as a nanny for their three children. The pair had only seen each other a couple of times, but without knowing it, both Frederick and Emmeline started falling for each other. In a later discovered journal that belonged to Frederick, he would often write about her beauty, describing her as the most beautiful person to have ever walked this earth, saying that her voice was like a melody that only angels could sing, that she had long chestnut hair with hazel-colored eyes that glowed like honey in the sun. Legend says that on the first morning of November, while Frederick was raking up leaves in the back garden, Emmeline decided to make up an excuse to talk to him. While the children were napping, she went out into the yard with a mug of hot apple cider. He graciously accepted the drink because he was cold, but mostly so that he could have a chance to talk to her. They spoke for what only seemed to be 10 minutes, when in reality it had been closer to an hour. Upon realizing how much time had passed, Emmeline sprang up and ran back into the house to check on the children, who were thankfully still asleep in their beds. After only a few months of dating, Frederick asked Emmeline's father, Henry, for her hand in marriage. Emmeline's father was allegedly very protective of her, and yet somehow he agreed, and the two were married in July 1960. Their marriage was a happy one, and while they weren't wealthy, they couldn't have been happier. Emmeline brought out the best in Frederick. He became more outgoing and found confidence in himself that he never thought possible. Frederick continued his work as a gardener. Emmeline volunteered to teach art classes to children after the church's Sunday service. Frederick is said to have attended these classes, not following along to the lesson, but painting his wife instead. After several attempts, the newlyweds were able to conceive a child by the spring of 1961, which, to their surprise,
ended up being twins. The boy was named Henry, after Emmeline's father, and the girl was named Susan, Susie for short, after Frederick's mother. Frederick quickly realized that working the hours he had been working wouldn't be enough to support a family of four on a single income. So, he decided to double his hours and worked for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, so that he could provide a life of comfort for his wife and children. Unfortunately, like most things, this happiness didn't last forever. Reports indicate that on the night of Friday, October 13th, 1961, Frederick had to work late at the hospital and could not make it home in time for dinner. While home alone, Emmeline and her children had been attacked by an unknown male. Their attacker killed the children immediately, but Emmeline survived and was brought to the hospital. Frederick was about to leave the hospital when an ambulance and two police cars came whirling into the parking lot and were immediately greeted by a team of several doctors and nurses. Curious, he watched as they wheeled the patient out of the ambulance and, to his horror, it was his wife. He sprinted from the garden shed across the lawn and to the ambulance, stating that he was her husband and demanded to know what was going on. While doctors stabilized Emmeline, police informed him of the events that took place at their family home and explained how they would have to conduct a brief interview while they waited to speak with his wife. Shortly after their interview concluded, doctors had informed Frederick and the police that Emmeline was stabilized but still in critical condition and needed to be under constant supervision. The doctors led Frederick and the police into her room, and that's where she described the events that took place that night. During her interview, she stated that she had just finished bathing the children. Then, upon entering the room, she noticed the window was open, but didn't remember opening it. She quickly dismissed it and carried on with their bedtime routine. Once Henry and Susie were fast asleep, she carefully placed them in their cribs and quietly walked out of the room, shutting the door behind her. When she closed the door, it let out a loud whine, reminding her to ask Frederick to oil the hinge in the morning. After leaving her children, she went into the kitchen to prepare a plate of leftovers from that night's meal for Frederick. Once his plate was ready, she set it aside and decided to tidy up while she was waiting for Frederick to return home. That was when she heard what sounded like a muffled cry come from one of the babies. And then she could hear the door open, accompanied by the whine from its hinges. Assuming that Frederick had come home and comforted his children, Emmeline went to greet him as he exited the nursery. However, it was not him. It was someone she had never met. Before she could let out any cries for help, he began to attack her, and she was rendered unconscious shortly after the attack began. One of the neighbors walked by the home and saw the attack through the window. They immediately went home and called the police. Unfortunately, only hours later, Emmeline passed away in her sleep with her husband by her side. Authorities believed that the killer skipped town, and the lead detective passed along the description to other police departments in the county. Understandably, after this night, Frederick was forever changed. He became a recluse, haunted by his family's ghosts, and the overwhelming guilt, knowing that he could have saved them if he was home. Only leaving his home for work and to get food, anyone who had interactions with him stated that he had become rude and hateful. Some of the last journal entries found are reported to appear scattered as though he had lost all sense of reality. In early August of the following year, a delusional teenager was arrested 2 counties from Springwood and confessed to the murders of Emmeline and her children. Police informed Fred of the young man's arrest and assured him that he will face the consequences for the murder of Fred's family. Shortly after the arrest, in November of 1962, Springwood residents began filing police reports against Frederick, stating that he would start fights with teenagers and threaten children. Police assumed that Frederick had lost his mind due to the tragedies he had recently endured, and admitted him into the psych ward of the very hospital that he worked at not long before. After several months of treatment, doctors believed that he could rejoin society again and allowed him to keep his job as a gardener at the hospital. According to police files, 2 months after his release, children aged 6 to 18 began disappearing. At first, authorities believed it was a drifter who had arrived via train and made camp in the nearby woods, to which he would lure the children with false promises. After conducting several searches and finding nothing, the police turned their attention to Frederick. His violent history with children of this age gave them reason to believe that he was a possible suspect. An archive report states that a witness saw Frederick walking to the back of the hospital with a child who appeared to be fighting to get free. The police had investigated this report and could not find any other witnesses to support the claims until a month later. A hospital worker had gone to the basement and was headed to the laundry room when they smelled something awful coming from the boiler room. They went inside to investigate and found the bodies of six of the missing children. Next to their bodies laid gardening gloves and hedge trimming shears. Frederick was the only groundskeeper, and so this confirmed suspicions about him being the killer. Before police could begin their search, word quickly spread about the discovery and who the killer was. The fathers of the missing children were enraged and sprang into action, gathering outside of Frederick's home. Fueled by anger and grief for their lost children, they set his home on fire, not knowing that Frederick was inside until they heard his screams. As time went on, his cries fell silent, just as the fire department arrived on scene. Once the fire was out, they searched the home for Frederick, and never found his body. As sad as his story was, the Springwood residents were relieved that this monster had died a death worthy of his crimes. Exactly 1 year after the fire, several parents brought their children to see their family doctor, citing that the children were sleepwalking while simultaneously having night terrors. The children claimed that he was going to get them, that he was going to kill them. The children were prescribed melatonin to aid their sleep and cure their night terrors. Shortly after that, a child died of a heart attack in their sleep, and then another, and another, while others kept humming a tune that the parents had never heard before. One child who had reported having night terrors had gone missing in the middle of the night. She was found later that morning, hugging her knees and rocking in the cemetery at a gravestone marked Emmeline Emma Krueger, devoted wife to Frederick Krueger and loving mother to Henry and Susan Krueger. To the left of Emmeline's resting place were the graves of her two children and the headstone for her husband, Frederick Fred Krueger. The little girl was mumbling something, but the police couldn't hear what, so they knelt down and asked her to sing them her song. And she whispered with tears streaming from her eyes,
"One, two, Freddy's coming for you. Three, four, better lock your door. Five, six, grab your crucifix. Seven, eight, can you stay awake? Nine, ten, Freddy's back again."
And that is the true story of how the legend of Freddy Krueger came about. Just kidding. I wrote the whole thing based off of a meme I saw on Facebook years ago. Don't be mad. It was a good story, right? With that, my friends, we've arrived at the end of the first Freaky Friday podcast of October. I don't know if you guys are Halloween freaks like me, but I intend on watching one scary movie a day for this whole month. I don't know how long that's going to last, but I am going to do my best. If you have any suggestions on movies that you think would really scare me that I need to watch this month, send me a message on Instagram at That Canadian Podcast, or send an email to thatcanadianpodcast@gmail.com, or go to thatcanadianpodcast.ca, find today's episode, and leave a comment. Make sure you listen in on Monday for a very special episode of Movie Monday. You may be wondering, Sam, why is it so special? Well, let me tell you. It's because Andrew is going to be gone for a month, and it's probably going to be the last Movie Monday episode we record for a while. I may try to do some on my own, but let's be honest, it's not going to be the same without him. And lastly, I'd like to thank Hunt a Killer for sponsoring today's episode. Anyways, guys, that wraps it up for today. This has been That Canadian Podcast. I am That Canadian. Thanks for listening.